it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, joined today by Penny Rich, my favorite politician and chef.
Hey, thank you.
You know, what a combination.
I know.
You know, because there's always something cooking in politics.
That's right.
Did you see what I did there?
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Yeah, we got a lot cooking right now, Gene.
Oh, my God. You know, we have so much stuff cooking, and America's getting food poisoning from some of it.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. I know. Right before the holidays, too. Jeez.
Really. Less would be more. Less more would be more.
There's the
most worrisome wordplay is in the middle of all of this stuff.
Sure.
I just want to talk to you a little bit about, before we launch into topics that are our favorites, which is food and Thanksgiving and food. I want to know if you are as unsurprised as I am at the flood of people, mostly women, not entirely, from all over the place, all kinds of businesses, public, private, previously private, saying, yes, this happened. You know, the Me Too movement, basically. But also just the thing about, it feels to me, I talked to Aaron about this about 2 weeks ago. I said, you know, we won't really know this until it's in the rearview mirror. But it feels to me like a tipping point has been reached, and that now somewhere, maybe just by the totality of it, somehow people are understanding that, yeah, you know what? I think maybe you should just presumptively believe that woman or those women.
Right.
And then let the guy explain himself. But let's start. How about if we start out believing the women?
Right.
Just for fun, because we've tried it the other way.
Well, blaming the victim for me has always been so pathetic in any case. And so when we start out by believing the women, I think it just makes us a better society.
Right.
You know, so think about it. We had our own little scandal here in Chapel Hill.
What?
Before this all started brewing up, right? Remember, we talked about this. This happened before everything started going public. And I think what's happened, though, is with the election of Donald Trump, I think women are feeling a little bit more empowered to say, yeah, you know what, I understand what sexual harassment now is. And our leader, our president, admitted to sexual assault.
Right.
And I think women are feeling empowered. That's right. I think women are feeling empowered to start discussing this. And I also think, and your mom and I were talking about this in the car on the way over. By the way, my mom is in the...
Jackie is sitting here to my right. She's my personal fact checker.
She is. She's looking at... And she was told not to speak, so she's going to do her best not to do that.
She's
although we know
say
that...
whatever she wants.
It could be.
Yeah.
But we were talking a little bit about this. A lot of men actually don't realize that they're sexually harassing women until it's brought to their attention. And then they're like, oh, wow, that was offensive. But it just sort of comes natural to a lot of men, and they don't think it's offensive. So if women don't start calling them out, how are they going to learn?
Well, I'm going to argue with you a little bit about that. Okay, so I saw a great comedy bit about this from this woman whose name I don't remember. And she said, fellas, here's your training about sexual harassment. If your pants are on the floor and hers aren't, that's the wrong thing. That's the wrong thing.
But that's blatant,
Let's start
right?
with the most crude
right.
and obvious
right.
thing.
That's blatant. But think about the comments that people make to you that just kind of don't, on the surface, it doesn't seem like sexual harassment. But then if you think about it a little bit more and a little bit more, you're like, wait, that wasn't right.
Right.
So you need to point that out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the risk of laying it at the feet of the women who involved here.
Right.
I will tell you that in a previous life of employment that I had, I was in senior management, and I had a colleague came to me and was talking about a couple of her coworkers, not peers, and was complaining about their behavior, their language, and so on and so on. And this is a person who was in management and female. Whose voice was like a squeaky little mouse. I mean, I had a heck of a time hearing her half the time. And I said to her, so what happened when you went to HR and reported this? Oh, no. haven't reported it. I'm just telling you. And I said, well, why are you telling me? Well, I was hoping that you would go and, because it seemed to her that I was the sort of person, she's right, who would say to the guy, hey, you know, you got a potty mouth. Why don't you keep it to yourself? Okay. I would just push right on him like his older sister would. And you know what I mean. There's just a sense of personal authority that some people can convey and some cannot. They just can't bring themselves to do it.
Right.
But that's a reason to go to HR.
Yeah. If there's an HR, think, you know, when I first
started
working,
there
was
no.
Right. So you go to your boss, who is a male boss, and they were like, oh, you know, the guys, they're only kidding around. They don't really mean it.
It's only a joke.
It's only a joke. Come on, you can't take a joke.
Right.
But it's not, you know, both you and I raise sons.
Yes.
And, you know, some of the things that we teach them hopefully stuck. And I think they did. You know, we were just talking about your son a little bit. Now that he's a new father. And, you know, I often think that, again, it's women that are constantly trying to educate men because we're the mothers of these sons. And I know you don't want to put the blame on the women, right? But
it's also empowering them to fix it.
I think that
starting in January, we all kind of, you know, put our boots on and said, oh, okay, you know what? I guess the ultimate terrible thing could happen.
It did.
It did happen, even though everybody knew that he did this, and it wasn't a contested fact that he did it. America, as a country, because of the fluke of the Electoral College and maybe for some other reasons, put this guy in office. So now we're living through that consequence.
That's right.
And I think my feeling about it is that a whole bunch of us, especially people our age, your age and my age, young people. I just wait for the audience to get over that claim. I think that, you know, it's like, okay, you know what? I've gotten to be this age. I've been putting up with this all my life.
I'm done.
Enough already.
I'm done.
I'm going to just say it.
Right.
I'm going to put it out there.
Right.
You know what? You believe me. You don't believe me. You believe him. You don't believe him. If you think that my integrity is not at least as good as this guy, you know, you'll come to your own conclusion. But I'm done with my tippy toe ballet slippers.
That's
about
right.
The topic.
Right. Well, you put your boots on. I put my pink hat on, and I know we couldn't use that other word that belongs with the pink hat. But
that's
I mean,
rhymes with wussy.
Yes, and I think we've actually had a whole discussion about this on air. So
we're
good. But I agree. I think it's the top down. I think that women are absolutely fed up in every way, and you know, quite frankly, I'm empowered by women coming forward. Alabama, we got to do something about that.
Oh my God!
I
you know what? Here's what needs to happen in Alabama, and I know everybody in Alabama. I know you listen to the Weekend Water Cooler.
They do. They stream it in.
I know they do. So here's my advice: keep Roy Moore in the race. He's going to be on the ballot regardless. You can't take him off the ballot now.
That's right.
Don't let the governor, you know, pull the plug on the election and call it off and all of, no. Let him stand for election. Let's all just sit down and be quiet a little bit and let the election draw near. Let them vote. Let Alabama be the ones who raise their hands and say, yes, we want to put a child molester into the United States Senate. Go ahead.
Right.
Because you know what that's going to give us? It's going to give us 2018.
That's going
to give us overwhelming, you know, really big wins.
Right. And I agree with you. I mean, if we look at the trend anyway, Virginia was amazing. It really was. I was, my heart was in my mouth the entire night. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I was watching elections here too, and that was also an interesting turn. But Virginia was just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it just goes to prove that, you know, what you said before, women are putting on their boots because it's the women that are going out to vote.
It was suburban women who turned out and made that happen. And
that's right.
Always going to be who turns the election in a midterm election.
That's right.
And next year, that part is not going to be any different.
It's not. And we have to be mindful of that. And we have to push forward with our leaders of our parties to make sure that they understand that, where to target. You know, that's
one
of those mistakes that the Clinton campaign made. They didn't target the right people.
Just have to go knock on every door twice.
That's right.
If it's necessary, right?
Right.
I mean, so I think that Virginia and other states, I mean, there what was the number of the House of Delegates in Virginia? There's 100 seats. In previous elections, in previous cycles, there were Democrats running in opposition in usually 29, 30 of those races, mm-hmm. and the others were just so red
right.
they didn't bother.
Right.
They ran in 90 of them.
Almost in every single district.
That,
which
right.
we need to be doing too here in North Carolina.
Exactly.
I mean, don't say we're going to lose. You need to get in there and just do it. We need to fund people. We need to get them out
That's
there.
Right. And
we need to support
right.
them.
That's right.
And
the reason is, if all you do, even if the Republican wins, if all you do is contest and make them spend some resources
That's
and
right.
explain themselves, you just don't know that you might be able, whether or not you're going to be able to pick off one or two that in previous cycles you wouldn't have been
Never
able
happened.
To.
Never happened, yeah.
You wouldn't have been able to. So
I like your focus.
Yeah,
I think that's good.
I mean, I just really think it's granular. You have to know your neighborhood, and everybody needs to gather at the water cooler, at work, at home, you know, at the barbecue, in
sure.
your block party on the street. And yeah, you need to bring this stuff up and really have it out and have your arguments ready, but really try to hear the other side if the other side is coming to you. Because if you can allow yourself to take in that there is an explanation coming from the other side, if there's a grain of truth in it, then you have to be able to address that.
Yep,
it's
absolutely.
True.
Yeah.
Whew. So speaking of addressing things, this program has sponsors and they want to have their say. So we're going to step aside for just a moment with Penny Rich, and we're going to come back and we're going to dive into food, I think. I hope we don't get, you know, like gravy
Greasy.
All over ourselves and
yeah.
stuff. It's probably going to be pretty messy. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We're going to be right back. Okay, we're back. We're talking about various wisecracking things that mothers say. I don't know what Jackie has to do with this. Nothing. I'm going to say nothing. No blame for Jackie, but Penny Rich is here with us, and we're gonna dive into the, you know, look, it's going to be Thanksgiving the week that this program is going to air on Sunday, and then on Monday you're going to take the turkey out of the freezer if you have a frozen turkey, and you're going to hope it's thawed by Thursday morning. How long should you take a turkey out if it's frozen?
Oh, a couple of days. People
like
don't.
Sunday, Monday for cooking.
Yes,
Thursday.
Yes. People forget that, and then they wind up starting to cook the frozen turkey, and the turkey doesn't.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, they put it in the oven, and it's cooked here, and it's not cooked there. It's because they didn't defrost it if
yeah.
it was a frozen turkey.
Yeah, it's always
yeah.
the best part of a rom-com movie or something where they go,
yeah.
okay, I've got the turkey. It's pretty cold.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you a story at the end, but I'm not going to start with it. But remind me to tell you the story at the end about the apple pie in the oven. All right, but let's not talk about that now. Let's talk about turkey.
We'll save that.
Yeah,
I think I might know that.
I think
story.
I told it once before, so we might have to say
it's
it again.
It should be, you know, some stories. I don't know if your family's like mine, but. You know, sometimes my dad doesn't realize that he's already told this story 300 times.
Yeah.
And so on special occasions, he'll tell a story.
You have to bring the story back.
And you have to go, oh, my God, really? I can't believe he really said that. Oh, no. And then what happened next? I can't imagine. Let me guess. You know.
I told you this story, but it's
yes.
a great way to end the conversation.
It really is. It's a great little thought project going forward, too.
Right.
It makes you search your mind for memories that might be similarly, you know, inspiring.
Yeah.
It was an inspiring story, in my opinion.
You know, you just said something, memories. I think Thanksgiving actually does bring back a lot of memories for people, good
yeah.
and bad.
Good and bad, right.
But there's some of the best memories that I have are based around Thanksgiving, and not necessarily with
right.
the family in eating the Thanksgiving, but I remember coming home from college, and
oh,
everybody
yeah.
used to get together on the Wednesday night before because
oh, yeah.
no one had to be anywhere, right?
Right, right?
We used to all go out, and people you haven't seen in a while, and
right.
it was was just really a good time. Everybody yeah. was home. Everybody was there having that beer and, you know, hanging out and dancing and, you know, just having a really good time.
Right.
And then, of course, you had to wake up the next morning with a big hangover and help cook Thanksgiving dinner.
I don't know what happened to that green bean casserole. I just wow.
Yeah.
I don't think the beer helped it at all.
Not at all.
Have you ever taken a food ingredient like wine or beer or anything like that and just put the wrong thing in thinking it was that thing, you know, like putting scotch in instead of?
Yeah, not that, but I know
like that.
I think things like people that the biggest mistakes people make is they don't mark their containers of what's on the shelves and they mix up sugar and salt. That is a very very common mistake that people make.
Yeah.
Or they don't read the hands up. They don't read the ingredients and they put too much baking powder or baking soda in things and then you can really taste that too. That's just not a good
taste
thing.
You want.
Yeah, so some of those mistakes. I think on Thanksgiving though the biggest mistake that people make is they don't know how to cook the turkey. And
that's
it's hard
true.
To believe after all these years that
know,
that's still
right?
a problem.
I actually, I just shouldn't dare say this, but I believe that I have figured out the turkey, but it's only after a very long time of failed experiments.
Huh.
But I did pick up a tip or two from Her Highness Martha Stewart.
Oh.
And my mother-in-law, the combination of which has been, you know, pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
And my double secret trick is as follows. First of all, I usually cook a fresh turkey, but I've made a frozen turkey last year, I think, and I was stunned how well it turned out. So I think I've been maligning frozen turkeys unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I've just had bad experiences before because they were overcooked.
Right.
So, because to me, the dry turkey thing is just the worst crime against humanity
right,
there is.
Yeah.
Well, almost. So, my secret, and I'm a layperson, so take it easy on me, is my mother-in-law's trick is absolutely would never cook a turkey stuffed. Forget it.
That's
it's
number
very
one.
Very hard to get it
that
right.
That is number one.
And so I cut up an apple, a Granny Smith apple, and cooked and put it inside the turkey. And for whatever reason, that helps
right.
with the moisture inside the breast, I think, especially. But also, I take a couple of sticks of butter, in which on that particular day, because of the rules of the American Diabetes Association, there's no calories in butter on Thanksgiving.
On Thanksgiving.
People don't know that, but, you know, it's true.
Thanksgiving, you can get away with
That's
anything.
Exactly right. So I take that butter and I melt that down on the stove. I add about half a cup of white wine to that and stir that around a little bit. And then I put a cheesecloth in that and I get that good and soaked. And then I put that on top of the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tent it after that.
Right.
And I might add a little bit of butter once or twice during the cooking process, but generally, that bird is going to be moist when it's done.
Yeah.
The trick is just browning the skin, but
right. And not burning the skin. So tenting is something that I think most folks are not used to doing. They just think you put it in there and you baste it every once
right.
in a while. I'm not a big fan of basting. I don't actually think that pouring water over skin that is already dried up is helping you get any moisture into it.
Right.
But I like your idea of the cheesecloth and certainly tenting the breast because the breast meat cooks so fast
right.
while the rest of it doesn't.
Right.
Never stuff a turkey. Putting an apple or even some onions in there, just wonderful. It's
right.
a great idea.
Put onions in the pan.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
and
they should put them inside.
Yeah. And one other thing that I've been doing the past couple of years, which I think is great, is running your hand under the skin and loosening it and putting some butter underneath the skin, and butter and sage. So when the turkey's actually cooking, that butter is melting and it's kind of staying in there.
Yeah.
So you're getting the flavor on the top and the bottom, and that is, you know, top from the skin underneath the butter. It's great. A lot of people swear by the brining turkeys now. They brine it a day or two before. And we one Thanksgiving, we had one of each. We had a brined one and one unbrined.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't really tell that much of a difference.
Right.
So, I think if you are a briner and you like to do it, go right ahead and do it. But I'm not sure it really, for me, that it makes that much of a difference.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be a lot of salt, too. Right?
Yeah.
Brine is...
It's salt and sugar,
And
you're supposed to wash that off, but,
Yeah, but the idea is that it would penetrate into the,
the
meat.
Right, right.
So.
And then the whole idea that you have to cook a turkey all day long... That's just not true. I mean, you know,
it's really not.
It's not. I mean, you're good if you just set aside a good maybe 3 or 4 hours that you're going to do that. That's fine.
I try to get my turkey in the oven at about, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. And anybody who knows me will tell you, Gene is not an early riser.
Except on Thanksgiving with the hangover.
Right, exactly. Why bother going to bed?
Why bother,
really,
yeah.
You think about it. No, but I like to do that because I want to have the turkey done by about 11 or 12
right.
o'clock. And
well, then
I have it on a steam tray.
Right.
Just
put all
keep
your,
it warm.
Right. Get all your sides back in the oven. Reheat
right.
them. Because that's you should always make your sides in advance. Anyone that waits to Thanksgiving to make their sides is looking for trouble.
Yes.
It really is. It's just.
And we'll easily find it.
They will find
No, Thanksgiving Day is for fighting with your family over the remote and
right.
Arguing about whether or not it's time to put another log on the fire.
Right.
And,
which football game you're going to watch and, you know,
right.
that
or,
whole thing.
Or, you know, which parade. We watched the parades. Now, we were pretty big on the parades when I was a kid.
Macy's Day Parade?
Oh, Macy's.
Yeah.
And the California and the Rose Parade and all
yes.
that. My dad always loved those.
You knew I grew up in New York, so we go, Mom is sitting here, so we could tell you one time we tried to get in the front of the Macy's Day Parade, which meant you had to go out there by 5:30 in the morning.
I'm sure.
And she was very cold. Mom was very cold and was like, Mom, don't worry about it. And she was like, why? I'm like, I brought the flask. And there she was like, I'm not going to drink on the streets in New York. Penny, what's wrong with you? And you bet, I lasted about 15 minutes. She's like, pass the flask.
You pass the flask. Yeah, and you were what, 12, 13?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, my God. I brought the flask.
I brought the flask.
And yet she came to this interview, no flask.
No flask.
I just don't even know what you call that.
Yeah, well, we're
just not prepared.
Got a couple of days.
Not prepared for how difficult the next segment is going to be.
Oh.
Because in the next segment, we're going to probably talk more about Thanksgiving.
Awesome.
And, you know, there's always more.
Awesome.
There's always more. So we're talking with Penny Rich. And Silent Jackie, you know, who is now just a radio star, Silent
right.
Jackie. She probably
yeah.
has followers on Twitter.
That's right.
Doesn't even know it.
Doesn't even know it yet.
Yeah, because she's above that. She's above it. So we're talking with Penny Rich about food and a little bit of politics, and we're trying to keep everybody's acid indigestion under control. We're going to step aside for just a minute. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. We're talking with Penny Rich, and quite honestly, we were just talking about Keith Richards, but it's a family show, so yeah. we'll just continue on. So look, Thanksgiving, some of it's about food, some of it's about a food fight, and some of it's about what do you do with your uncle who says he just heard this on Fox News and has to tell you blah, blah, blah. You know, Rachel Maddow often does a segment probably starting about now, for folks to get ready for the holidays, for being at the table with the family member, for trying to keep peace. And so what she does is she'll give a 10-minute primer on a topic saying, okay, your uncle who's always watching Fox News, he's going to ask you about that uranium deal. Here's what you need to know. And she'll give you point one, point two, and point three.
Right.
So that you just have something to say back. And, you know, quite honestly, I've been very lucky in my family that my family went, you know, was with the right side of the full wave, even though we ended up on the losing side of the election. But I think it made it a lot easier for everybody to take
sure.
because there wasn't anybody in the room doing a victory dance, stepping on anybody's face.
That's right. That's right.
And in this particular cycle, that's been kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, we won, so live with it and,
yeah.
you know, all that.
But my family is the same. We're probably, you know, my sons and were part of the Bernie Bros up until the point where
right.
Hillary was brought in. And then
right.
we all sort of got on the same page because we
right.
knew what we needed to do. We knew how important it was. And I don't have any family members that really would argue with me during Thanksgiving about politics. However, you know, when I was younger and, you know, you would go to other people's homes,
right.
You never knew what was coming at you.
Right.
And that
right.
was, yeah.
But fortunately, at least the content of what the opposition was quoting did not tend to be from the bottom of a sewer.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That helps.
Yes. Yes.
Is it your perception that that's changed in any way, shape, or form? What comes from Trump's Twitter feed, for example, in terms of the nature of it? Do you think that he's holding back at all, or having the slightest amount of concern about offending anyone, or...
I
can't even believe I'm asking
I know.
Question.
I do not. I believe that he doesn't know what he does from minute to minute. So I think that he tweets out something just to do it, and then he doesn't remember that he did it.
Right. And will deny that he ever said
it. And deny that he said it, or lie about it, or he'll go back and said, you read it the wrong way.
Well, didn't see the quotation mark.
Right. If people are going to read it the wrong way, then don't tweet it.
Yeah, well, there's that.
That's just pathetic.
Yeah, but he doesn't care about that. Somehow,
he doesn't.
He really doesn't.
He really doesn't. I can't imagine their Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, what do they all sit around and talk about?
What do they talk about?
Well, I mean, I guess Hillary Clinton, because he can't get over that. Even though he beat Hillary Clinton, he can't stop talking about her. And, you know, on the other hand, I think the Clintons will have a lovely Thanksgiving.
I think they will.
I think they will. I think that it's going to be joyous and, you know, the grandkids will be there and... they'll be happy.
I mean, one thing is they're going to say, well, you know what? It's been a year. We're not nuked yet.
Yeah.
And we thought we might be. So if we got through 1 year, we can maybe get through three more if we absolutely
or
had to.
Or one.
Or less. Less would be good.
Less would be good. Yeah. But I always think if you're going to go into that, if you're at Thanksgiving, you feel like the conversation's going south, you know, you can change the subject. It's just not the day. And I think Rachel Maddow's right. You know, here's point A, B. Let's move on.
Right.
You know, let's find some common ground. Let's find something fun to talk about. Let's talk about the football game. You know, let's talk about concussions. I mean, you know, we could talk about anything besides what Donald Trump is doing right
now. Yes. Well, I will say this, that I think you're exactly right about that. One of the things that I learned about was not surprised to learn about Valerie Plame. They asked Valerie Plame, how did you get away with all these people, like the moms in your neighborhood, the people in your everyday life, that you were an undercover CIA agent all these years, and people very close to you had no idea that that was true. Can you describe how it is? This was an interview, not testimony. How is it that you were so successful at remaining undercover? She said, well, I understand how people are, especially men, and that if they ask you about what you do for a living, it's so much easier than you might guess how you can turn the conversation around very quickly to get them talking about themselves.
Sure.
And then as you're appearing fascinated with whatever they're saying, they think you're a wonderful conversationalist because you're listening to them.
That's right.
And she said, you know, she said she used that all the time.
Right.
And that when people are trying to, most people who would ask her questions about what she does for a living, about what her husband did for a living, about why was she just away for 2 months and nobody seemed to have any specific answer. Of course, her husband was pretty good at this, too.
Right.
You know, she would just say, well, you know, she would give a vague answer and then would ask a question. And without actual skills of inquisition that that a journalist would have, that an attorney or a prosecutor would have, about bringing you back to the topic and, well, thank you for that information, but you didn't answer the question.
Right.
Without that, just in everyday life, you can get away with that very, very easily. And if you think about applying that just as a matter of having manners, that if you have a family member who is trying to bring it up and trying to stir it up, I think actually it's probably a pretty good tactic to say, well, I mean, you know, we're having a nice meal. I don't know why you want to stir that up. Everybody's having a good time. It make them feel a little bit like they're trying to throw a grenade into the, you know, be a skunk at the garden party, right?
Yeah.
And I think the most confrontation would be the most direct about, why are you pressing on this point? We don't need to solve this
right
here today.
Right.
Or even asking someone to just, would you come into the kitchen and help me with something?
Right.
Right.
Who needs more gravy?
And yeah, and let them save face a little bit, at least the first time.
Right.
But then if it goes on, you kind of have to throw down, right?
I think you do, but I think once you do that once, you might get other family members on your side. So you'll have, you know,
maybe
uncle, someone.
Maybe that's it. You need a validator.
Yeah, you need someone to be.
You need a validator.
Well, there's got to be some eye contact. There's got to be a little, you know, tweak. I'm pulling my ear or something. You need a signal when to shut, you know, Uncle Ben down, or, you know, Grandpa needs to go to sleep now. You know, something. Something.
Something more subtle than the cast iron frying pan.
Yeah, that's not going to go.
The kitchen with
Or, you know, my family, you know, they start throwing the forks and, you know, stop.
Stop. Use the fork. Use your words.
Use your words.
Use your words. Including the ones, I have nothing more to say about this topic.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, ask another question.
Or ask another question. Like, who's going to win in Alabama next month?
That's right.
That's not going to be the good one to go to.
That might not be so good.
How about the Tar Heels? Can you believe Carolina and those cheaters and those paper classes? Use that.
Yeah.
If that'll get them off Trump, use that.
Sure.
I'll throw myself on that particular sword.
I think that's
I feel an obligation. Because the whole topic makes me kind of mad.
Yeah.
You know, I hate it. It's not that, you know, I don't feel a side, one side or the other. It's more complicated than that. But I hate it. It's embarrassing to me as a Carolina graduate.
I know.
I hate it. I wish it weren't true.
Well, speaking of sides, what kind of side dishes are you making for Thanksgiving?
Well, I always make yellow turnip.
Ah.
I cut that up. And then basically simmer it in molasses for hours, and then mash it up.
That's not on your diabetes diet, but
it's,
okay.
It's not.
Yeah.
But fortunately
for one day.
I really don't know how both of my parents and all of my siblings ended up being diabetic. How did that even happen?
I just don't even know.
It's a mystery.
Yeah, well, when you cook in molasses. Do you do the traditional green beans, and you'll do dressing on the side, right? Because it's not stuffing.
We do the dressing unless it's right. When it's in a pan
it's called dressing,
it's
right?
Dressing. We do the dressing.
Cranberry sauce?
And we make the cranberry
all
sauce.
Right.
My daughter-in-law is going to make the stuffing and the cranberry sauce this year because she doesn't have much to do. 6-week-old baby, what's she got? Nothing but time on her hands.
She's going
to
cook a little.
Come on.
It'll be good. What about potatoes, sweet or white?
Usually, I'll make one or two sweet potatoes and just nuke them. I have to tell you the truth. I might make a nice mashed potato, red potatoes.
Lots of butter in that.
Not too much.
And is there
probably too much?
Is there pie for dessert?
Oh, yeah. No, I make three pies. I make apple pie that's basically my mother's apple pie that she uses my hands to make.
That's right.
Because she's deceased, so she has to
use my
hands.
She has to do it somehow.
And I make a pumpkin pie. Which I often make two of those because one of my sons will basically eat the whole
entire pie.
And then the other pie is for everybody else. And then I make a pecan pie because that's my husband's favorite. And I'm probably saying pecan.
Or not pecan.
Showing I'm a Yankee. Maybe it's supposed to be pecan, but it's a pecan pie. It's a pie with pecans in it.
Pecans, not pecans.
And I didn't make that pie until my older sister said to me, 10 or 15 years ago, which is just recently for me, she said, you should always make a pecan pie. It's the easiest pie in the world to make. She said, the recipe's on the Karo syrup bottle. It's the easiest pie in the world.
It's funny.
You know, you stir up the eggs, you throw this in, you throw that in, you throw it in the oven. Come on. It's the crust is the hardest thing.
Right.
I mean, a lot of my friends will say, I make this pie and that pie. And I say, and you make your own crust? And they go, oh, no.
Right.
Much too hard. That's the whole thing.
It is the whole thing.
Come on.
The crust is the whole thing.
Drop a banana in a decent crust, and everybody's going to go, I love your banana pie.
Exactly.
Because it's the crust. That's the whole trick of it.
All about the crust, yeah.
That's right.
I love making crust. It's great.
It's
It's real.
And again, my mother's foolproof crust. I don't use butter in the crust. Use oil.
Oh.
So it's much easier to handle, and it just comes out. It's very easy.
I'm a butter crust person. Butter flour.
It's hard to work it though.
Teeny bit of salt. Well, you got to keep putting it back into the fridge. Yeah, You have to be really careful.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, too
Who
much.
Who wants to do all that?
Too
work?
Much.
No. Her mother's nodding.
Not yet.
Your mother's with me.
Not
on
a
this.
Baker.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and Penny's going to tell us the pie story. Believe me when I tell you, you want to have a scoop of ice cream ready for this story, because you're probably not going to want to eat the pie after you hear the story. But anyway, we're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler here on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Totally apolitical, talking with Penny Rich, and a little commentary whispering in my ear from the wisdom from my right.
Oh, my. Jackie did speak. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness. I've got the goods on you so bad.
I know.
Just don't want to know, including... So tell us about the pie.
The apple pie story. So this is a lovely story. My mom was living in Florida at the time, and so I was living in New York City. My sisters were living in Jersey. It was Marcy's year to host Thanksgiving dinner. Mom comes up from Florida. We kind of rotated. New York City, my apartment was a little tight in New York City, so the apartments in Jersey were better. And we go, and we're getting ready to cook. Sometimes we didn't always make turkey. Sometimes we made lobster. I just want to put it out there. We did.
Coming to your house.
I know. Well, we did. So anyway, this year we happened to make lobster, so we didn't need the oven. They got, you know, pretty much everything got cooked on top of the oven. And I went to go heat the oven to put the pie in to bake it. I had already prepared it and was going to bake it. And all of a sudden, the kitchen just fills up with smoke. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I open my sister's oven. And believe it or not, we had Thanksgiving at her house the year before. And I opened her oven, and there was an apple pie in the oven from the year before. And it was on fire. And I was like, Marcy, there's an apple pie in here. Did you realize that? And she said, no, I haven't used my oven. I'm like, in a year? She had not used her oven in a year.
In a year's time.
In a year's time. And the apple pie that made it back into the oven to rewarm lived there for an entire year.
Well, you know, and then you get an archaeologist to come in and try to get the carbon dating on the pie.
Oh, my God. It was so funny. Mom, you remember this, right? Yep. She's shaking her head. Yes.
The part that I love is the end. It was on fire.
It was on fire.
It was just combusted.
It was so dried out and sitting there. And, you know, of course, instead of like reacting like, holy, we were just laughing hysterically. And that we had to figure out, okay, how are we gonna put this out? She didn't have a fire extinguisher or anything. I just threw some wet rags on top of it, and it was fine. But the house was full of smoke.
Because, I don't know what the safety instructions are for the apple pie fire scenario.
I
don't think I have those instructions written down anywhere for myself.
But the fact that she hadn't used the oven for a year, and I was like, well, how did you cook anything? She's like, I just made stuff on top.
On the stove.
I make stuff on top.
Well, I will just tell you that, because I'm pretty sure she's not going to hear this, that my stepmother is kind of the same way. Not a cook. Not at all.
Mm,
her
no.
idea of cooking is to heat up a pan, probably too hot, throw a bunch of stuff in it. And burn it.
Right.
And, well, I mean, I say this with love. You know, her stir fry is it's like one temperature.
Right.
High or off.
Right.
So, you know, if it's unattended for a moment, it's going to go bad. So I was out there in Chicago at one point, and I was going to broil some steaks for us for dinner. Now, they have a gas oven with which I have no experience at all. And I'm putting the steaks under the broiler.
Oh.
And, you know, there's flames on the top. And I'm going... Anna, are the flames, are they supposed to be there? Because, I mean, I really couldn't tell.
Know.
I didn't know. She comes over and looks, and just get this picture in your mind of the two of us. Imagine this from inside the oven, the two of us peering into the oven. And neither one of us knows the answer, if it's supposed to be this way or not.
And both of your heads were in the oven.
And practically, yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
And I said, well, I'll tell you what. It's fire. It's a means of cooking a steak. It's still on the pan. I'm just going to leave it here to cook, and we'll just see what happens. But I'm not going to go very far away. where is your fire extinguisher, though? So she's like, now she's looking around for the fire extinguisher while I'm saying it's probably okay.
Yeah. So the point of the story, actually, for both of our stories, is that you should really have a fire extinguisher, especially during Thanksgiving.
Have a fire extinguisher, but I'll just give you this pro tip also. Especially after I heard this story the very first time, every time I use my oven, every single time, right before I hit any button to turn it on, I open the oven and look real quick to make sure that, you know, we're not keeping, you know, copies of my favorite book in there or like that.
Yes. Yeah. My mother has also done this. She has also set the house asmoke.
I don't believe you. She
uses her oven as a storage facility.
Now, my mother-in-law used to do that all the time. She would store, you know, unused pans and wicker baskets
and then turned them plastic.
No,
she's melted plastic. It's wonderful.
This is not a
mother like daughter kind of thing.
So
luckily, I broke loose.
Check the oven first, and then preheat the oven to 475 or whatever it's going to be. Well, thank you for coming in for our little fun games.
Oh my God! Always fun.
And you know, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I know you will because I know your mom's going to be there,
and the sisters.
And you're cooking.
And the boys are coming home, and we're gonna. I think there's going to be girlfriends. And other friends, and you know what we call in Yiddish the whole mishpacha.
I said it wrong.
The whole mishpacha. You got to get the ch.
Mishpacha.
Mishpacha. There you go.
Oh my God.
There you go. That means
That's
the whole family's
good.
Coming.
I'm in the family.
You're
now,
in
right?
that. Now you're in. You're
All right.
Good.
I'm in.
You're
That's
in.
Excellent.
All right.
All right, everybody. Have a great week and a wonderful Thanksgiving. And join us next week on the Weekend Water Cooler.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.